Maintenance Steering Committee, and thanks for your work yesterday. We'll just recap very briefly. I thought we had a lot of good ideas and a lot of good discussion, particularly yesterday morning, quite a bit of discussion. I think as the day went on, we mitigated that a little bit. For today, what I'd like to ask of the steering committee members is that you continue to present the measures that you're assigned in a succinct way, and we definitely want to hear your opinions. So we want to hear your opinions about the criteria. You've spent more time with these measures than any other person on the committee, and we value what you have to say about it. So for the steering committee members who were who gave a little bit more information about how they viewed the criteria, that was very helpful. So our meeting today is open, and is it time to start the phones? All right, and Dr. Torchiana has a few words as well.
I would also like to convey my welcome, and I think my reflection on yesterday would be that the discussion is where the richness of the face-to-face meeting is sort of brought out. So the discussion is why we're here, and I thought we had numerous excellent discussions yesterday. Some of them were hard to wrap up in a bow at the conclusion, but that doesn't negate the value of the conversation and the thoughts that came out. I'd like to add to what Dr. Morris said, that for the developers today, we have a number of developers that are both the same as yesterday and then some new ones. Again, to try to be very succinct and pointed in your description of the measure so that you can present to the committee why the NQF should endorse this measure and the value of the measure for the patient population, as opposed to really a more exhaustive history of the measure. That way we'll be able to more evenly address the agenda today, hopefully. So thanks, everyone, once again.
I just want to add one other thing to that, and that is that for measure developers, we'd like for you to only comment on your own measures. We don't really want to hear your comments about the other measures that are under discussion until the public and member comment period. We're going to start today with two measures that were left over from yesterday, and we're going to do them in reverse order. We'll start with measure 301. I believe that CMS has already, or CMS representatives have already introduced this yesterday, so please take it away.
Good morning. So we'll start off by talking about measure 301, which is surgery patients with appropriate hair removal. This is part of the SCIP measures supported by the measures stored CMS. There are a number of exclusions just to keep in mind in the description of this measure. The exclusions include ages less than 18, length of stay greater than 120 days, laparoscopic surgeries, patients in clinical trials, and patients who perform their own hair removal. As far as the importance to measure and report this, there is some evidence back and forth just so that the group is aware about the fact that appropriate hair removal may reduce incidence of surgical site infections. Actually, in the outpatient measure that's paired with this, a complementary measure to this, there are some more sightings about 3 randomized controlled trials as well as 2 systemic reviews that show this correlation. However, there doesn't seem to be absolutely clear evidence that this is important. Having said that, the measure, when it was first reported in 2005, had a rate of 91.5, and now for the last several quarters, ending in quarter 2 of 2010, is now reported at 99.6%. So very close to being topped off, if not topped off. So really, I think the only thing for us to discuss and where I think we need the committee's expertise is, since the performance for this measure has been consistently high, should we continue to measure and report this? With the thought that this is currently integrated into the work processes in the ORs, and so there's minimal performance gap. And the flip side of that being that if we stop measuring and reporting this, could we actually revert back to previous performance, which was suboptimal? This could also, putting it together with the discussions that we had yesterday, could potentially meet the requirements for an inactive measure, something that gets followed up. So I'll wrap it up there, and we'll kind of open it up to discussion as far as what the group feels as far as continuing to measure and report.
Make a comment is, you know, this is one of these skip measures, just like preoperative antibiotics and redosing, et cetera, and is often considered a bundle of activities to reduce surgical site infection, although there has been some evidence in the literature that implementation of the bundle in certain patient populations hasn't moved the needle. And so when these are reported, we tend to look at the individual metrics, but we also tend to look at any given patient where the entire bundle has been properly implemented.
Are there any other comments or questions?
I also think it's unlikely that we'll see any recidivism here, because certainly in our ORs, what it did was it got rid of the razors, and I think everybody has now moved to either electric clippers or capillator or not doing it at all. So I don't see a sudden resurgence of people going out and buying, you know, Gillette razors to try to get around this. So I think it should be put to sleep or inactive or whatever we can do to it.
You know, there was a comment within the work group when this was discussed, exactly to your point, that for economic reasons, razors being cheaper than clippers, that there could be a reversion.
We purchased clipper bases, and then just the clipper heads are moved out, which are probably even cheaper than razors, but I don't think all the clipper bases are going to go in the trash. Every hospital I've been in has done that. I don't know if anybody has any different opinions.
Well, I think, you know, even though it's up in the 90s, there's still constant pushback from folks who don't think that it works, because different studies have cropped up, you know, refuting the value of the individual measure. So as much as it looks like it is topped out, I think this is something we still have to be vigilant about, and I wouldn't sunset it just yet.
But at the same time, there's growing information that none of these are, you know, truly affecting the incidence of wound infections. And so, again, why continue a metric? Why continue a policy that really, for all intents and purposes, has not been shown to be effective in what it was set out to do? We've changed it. We've topped it out. I think we should be going on and focusing at more aggressive, you know, and better wound care metrics.
Is there an NQF bundle measure for the SCIP bundle?
They're each endorsed individually, but one of the things that went through my head as you were talking about it being reported as a part of a bundle is whether or not there'd be any potential for moving it to an inactive status, if that's what the group wanted, with retaining it as a part of a bundle.
So let me just give you a little bit of a background here. This is an interesting issue. We're actually taking this issue of inactive endorsement status to our board next week, so we'll know definitively shortly. But there is, as Ray Gibbons, the chair of our cardiovascular committee, likes to refer to them, the Hall of Fame measures, ones that perhaps have had their life, probably time to put them on a shelf. But the idea would be, if there are any concerns about that the rate might in fact drop, the idea would be, is there a logical place to put some of these measures where they would be on inactive endorsement status, meaning people could do periodic surveillance to make sure the rates aren't dropping, but at the same time, we're working through a process. If the rates drop, we could bring it back through active endorsement status. But again, I think the point that was just raised is really the key one. Is there clearly a relationship between this and the outcome? And we went through this fairly carefully this past year. Heidi will know, because we did this for a couple of the surgical specialty societies, that the evidence was still strong with the exception of a couple of key areas, some GU areas, and some neurosurgical procedures. Other than that, the evidence was still pretty sound.
Well, and just to clarify, this is still part of the CMS bundle, correct? So, I mean, as long as the SCIP measures are are continue to be collected, it's going to be collected?
Yes and no. So CMS does retire measures as well when they view them as topped out. And I'm not sure if Dale Brecht was on the phone this morning. We've seen some indication that at least for the value-based purchasing program for CMS, they're probably going to retire this measure. It has not yet been retired for the inpatient payment program. But that is an issue. I do know that it's on the list for IPPF 2 to be retired. So that would be one. If CMS is going to retire it, it'll just go away. I do know Dale has mentioned there's a possibility that there is an all or none composite of all the SCIP measures. It has not been submitted to us yet. So usually if NQF removes endorsement within a period of time, it's usually removed by CMS unless they, in the new ACA legislation, actually need to put something out in the Federal Register indicating why they want to continue to use an unendorsed measure.
And they did note, I'm sorry, they did note that they might retire this measure, but that the Joint Commission will actually be taking over, it sounds like, if CMS retires the measure, is what's noted in the measure.
Could we make the suggestion that there be a bundle?
Well, if you're going to have a bundle, that means someone's going to have to collect the data. So if you're going to have the data, you might as well report it. I mean, if you're going to retire the measure as a standalone measure, then leaving it in the bundle means you still have to collect the data. So, either you say the measure is a good measure to stand alone and participate in the bundle. I don't understand, it's one or the other.
Well, I guess Alan's point earlier was there are some data to say that if you're compliant with all the measures, what it might be most indicative of is a culture of accountability and making sure you're doing the right things at the right time rather than stressing just the one individual measure. So I think there's a little bit of argument for maintaining it as a composite measure along with the whole bundle rather than as a standalone. And there are data that are supportive of it, and I think sometimes we're in the process of being whipshod back and forth with the latest study that comes out, but I think the preponderance of the evidence shows that it does have some utility.
In the workgroup D materials, there is a PDF for the composite measure that does include this. It's number 963. So we were sent it. I don't know if it's up or not, but it is in the package of materials.
And it was withdrawn. It's not ready for prime time.
I just wanted to mention, since I was looking at the antibiotic, which is part of this grouping, and in response to Dr. Seema's comments, looking at some current literature, there was a paper out of the JAMA within the last year looking at 400,000 patients, and it found that actually the global use of the measures did show a slight reduction in surgical heart infection, but very powerful statement about the individual item relationships or weak lacked clinical significance, and there was no meaningful association between adherence to the individual measures and decrease in post-op infection. So that would be a reason for the bundling. But I think it is a bigger issue for us to look at these, because they're all reported as individual measures. And it does seem like there's another paper out of the VA really saying the same thing, that looking at 5 years of experience, that there was not a correlation between these individual measures and decreased surgical site infection.
Just anecdotally, the issue with the hair removal is more about what not to do rather than what to do. So it was eliminating shaving the day before that really was the big advance, and then after that, it's all fairly trivial.
Okay, so we've heard some arguments for making this measure inactive, some arguments for bundling it, and some for keeping it. Is everybody ready to go ahead and vote, or any other comments? Could you provide some guidance as far as voting?
Exactly. So for voting, this would just say that it's endorsable by NQF. But if we wanted to say, yeah, we think it's a good measure, but it should be retired at this time, how do we indicate that with the voting?
First we vote to, correct me if I'm wrong, Melinda, but first we vote whether to endorse it or not, so whether to continue to endorse it, and then secondly we would determine whether we wanted to have it considered for inactive status. Is that what you're asking for?
You presented, it sounded like, three options. One is to bundle, One is to accept, and one is to accept and make it an active. And so I was just wondering, a yes or no vote.
So the activity is to evaluate the measure based as submitted. And the way in which you did it yesterday and we talked about was around the issue of importance. Is it important to continue to measure this one in this case? So you could indicate that it was not important based solely on the fact that it was topped out, and then continue to evaluate on the other elements if we're looking at it in terms of potential for an inactive status. So importance would be the place where you would indicate whether you believe it is important to continue to measure.
Does that seem clear? Anybody still a little bit foggy on that?
Well, one more point. We can't evaluate a bundle because it wasn't submitted to us. You could strongly recommend, regardless of what comes out from the vote, that CMS submit, and in this case, probably an all or none composite of the key process measures.
Anybody, so Dr. Steen, you made some comments about why you thought that might be less valuable to have an all or none bundled measure, a composite measure.
No, I think the data strongly supports the fact that it should be bundled. I'm just saying, I think it would be better just to not report it individually. But I mean, it's one of those things, if you're going to have it, there's two people still going to have to collect the data. So the question is, should it be a standalone reportable thing? If you ask that question, it seems to be it's topped out. And the question is, if this individual metric, does it need to be reported individually as submitted? Is one view. And I think it's fine as a bundle. I think it's important as part of the bundle. But it still makes this question, you're going to be collecting the data, do people still want to report it? It's a different issue by itself, individually. That's what my thing is.
Anybody else? No? Time to vote? I'm getting a signal that it's time to vote. All right, so if we think that it's topped out, if you think that it's topped out, that it's no longer important to measure individually, then you would vote no on this first one, and if you think that it should still be measured individually, you'd vote yes.
I'm sorry, Arden. Isn't it true that if we think they're important and should be bundled, we would have to approve both of them individually and then make a recommendation that they be bundled? No?
No. The policy that we have is that all measures within a composite need to be evaluated as to whether appropriate as a standalone measure or only as part of a composite. So you could make the argument this one could be maybe has outlived its usefulness as an individual measure, but would potentially still be useful now that you've evaluated it only within a composite. I know that's confusing. I apologize.
All right, let's go ahead and vote. I'd like everybody to go ahead and press your either one or two button again. Okay, good. So 4 for yes, 15 for no. And it's probably important to record at this point that as a committee that we think that this is popped out as an individual measure.
And we do need to go.
And that's the reason for the no vote. And we'll continue through the rest of the vote. Does the measure meet NQF criteria for... Are we going to go through the rest of the vote? Oh, okay.
And do we not need to go through the remainder of the criteria because we're going to put it on inactive? If we're going to put it on inactive status, we need to have assessed that it still meets all of the criteria. So
it's relatively new territory for us, so I think that would be fine. The cardiovascular committee, they just figured they'd revisit everything they had viewed as topped out before later and come back to it and do that. If you want to roll, go for it.
All right, so we're engaged in a work in progress here. How about scientific acceptability of measure properties? And again, please hit your button and then hit send. Aiming at Jessica. And one more time. Ten say completely, eight say partially, one says not at all. Usability. Ten say completely, five say partially, one says minimally, and one says not at all. Feasibility. They can say completely, five say partially, one says minimally. And then, do we need some guidance here? I think we need a little guidance here. Does the measure meet all the NGF criteria for endorsement? Is this, are we talking about the individual measure?
Yes. We are talking about the individual measure here.
Okay. And we previously voted that it does not meet the importance criteria. So does that mean that we have essentially a no vote on this, or?
I don't think there's a need to do this, but I think one question might just be to get a read of the group, and we'd have to hand count, or maybe just use this, just do a hand count of, if the inactive status is an option, would you recommend it for inactive status?
Yeah.
Rather than this.
I think my personal would be, this is an individual as an inactive status, but that we would recommend continued use in the bundle. Is that they would have to present us with a bundle.
I think we all pretty much agree on that. Is there anybody that would like to make any countering comments? Okay.
I'd just say that any component of a bundle still has to be supported by whoever the steward is. I mean, that's and that still begs the question of whether this should be in a bundle. And that has to be scientifically proven and presented as part of a bundle presentation. I don't think we should be saying we want this in a bundle. We should be saying it should be considered for a bundle.
Thank you for clarifying that. The next measure is 515, ambulatory surgery patients with appropriate method of hair removal. Again, Dr. Afarmanesh.
Perfect. So this is a similar measure to 301, looking now at the ambulatory surgery patients. And this actually, just to clarify as a deferring point to the previous measure, looks just at all ambulatory surgery patients who had hair removal. So it actually excludes patients who did not have any hair removal, with the measure of STRD being ASC quality collaboration. So as far as an importance to measure and report this, again, conceptually, it's just the same as 301. The measure stewards actually went to some great lengths to make sure that it was harmonized with 301 and added a number of different components, which they detail to make sure that happens. The importance to measure is that we do have, as we said yesterday, 80% of surgeries that are now happening in the outpatient setting. So if we're all doing something in the inpatient setting, it makes sense that it actually gets carried to the outpatient setting. They presented some data analysis that was done so to give you an idea of the performance on this measure currently. They looked at 192 ambulatory surgery centers between July and September of 2011. The performance on this measure was somewhere between 0 to 100%, but the mean was actually 96% and the median was 100%. So again, a pretty high level of performance. There were basically 7.3% of centers that presented data that was less than 100%. So that would really be the performance gap that we would be looking at. So again, as far as points of discussion I think very similar to some of the things that we discussed in the inpatient measure, as far as being close to being topped off. I was a little bit unclear about the validity testing that they did, just to direct your attention to that in 2C. The validity testing was done by having a questionnaire go out to 6 nurses, asking them 5 different questions, and this is not my area of strength, so I would appreciate some input from those in the group if you feel that was appropriate and enough. Otherwise, I'll leave it open to discussion. They do not, another point is, they do not have disparity data, and they explain that as once, if this is something that's federally reported, then they would have access to that and could provide us with that. But that's another area that's lacking in this measure.
Any other comments, questions?
I would say, I'm not sure that I want to contribute to surgical confusion out there if we've just inactivated one, and then you walk into your surgery center and now they're counting, you know, how you shave. So I would just point out that if we go one way on one and one the other, we're going to create, you know, surgical confusion, and surgeons don't need to be any more confused than they are on some days.
I think you're right about that. The only caveat with that is that there are a lot of freestanding ambulatory surgical centers where the surgeons only operate there and they don't operate in a hospital. So while you're right, for those of us who work in both worlds, it would be confusing to have them both. There are places where they don't, and that would be the data that I would be really interested in from the developers, is do they know, when they look at their data in terms of disparities, how many of them are freestanding centers and how many are associated with academic centers, because I bet there's some difference in the data.
I also don't understand why they don't occlude people who didn't have hair removal.
So they actually explain that there's about 75% of outpatient surgeries are actually ones that would not require hair removal. So the two big categories are cataract surgeries and injections for pain. That's why they just wanted to decrease the burden to people who would be collecting it by taking out 75% of outpatient cases.
So why don't they take out those ones that don't require hair removal rather than taking out all those who didn't have hair removed, because then you might be missing somebody who didn't have their hair removed.
Can the measure developer speak to that?
I can speak to a couple things. One is the first issue regarding topped out, and I think we talked about this yesterday, that ambulatory surgery centers do not have any federal mandate to report. And so in our database right now, we're up to about 800 ASCs, which is less than 15%. And as you were saying, there are a lot of surgery centers. The physicians just go to the surgery center and not to the hospital. So I think if you did take a look at the other surgery centers, I don't think the compliance rate would be as high. When we started out, we were similar to CMS, where we had a low rate, and each quarter we improved. So that speaks to topped out. So we would love to have this measure so that when we do have a federal mandate, we can look at all surgery centers and see where we are, and if we are, then we can move on. Regarding the question about the no hair removal, we just never thought of it that way, but we certainly could look at it that way. We did try to harmonize at the hospital, and the main reason was because of cataract and GI being such a large portion, that would mean that someone would have to actually go and count those patients, and that's a huge burden on ASCs. It's a lot easier to look at who had hair removal and then walk through those medical records than having to pull all those cataracts and all those GI cases when you know there was no hair removal. So that's the reason for it. We also use ICD-9 versus CPT. Sorry.
Why not just eliminate those cases that you know don't have hair removal and look at everything else? So.
I mean, my understanding would be if it's in the numerator or the denominator, then you have to actually look at those cases to say it's a no, correct?
I'm saying exclude those cases that don't require hair removal. Make that your exclusion instead of making no hair removal your exclusion.
Okay. I mean, we can certainly look at that.
I mean, I certainly agree with Peter on this, but the issue becomes, this is directed at surgical site infection reduction. Okay. There's no data in there about ASC surgical site infections.
There's no data out there.
I know. I'm saying that as a point of fact. There's no data available. So you have no idea if this is going to have an impact. We have plenty of data to say individual measures have been reported in the SCIP criteria, have not been shown to be effective. So why, and we just voted to inactivate because of lack of importance in the inpatient setting. So this seems to be a measure just to have a measure that follows along a measure that we didn't think was an adequate measure. And so should we put ourselves through that?
Well,
what's the utility of this data? By as itself, it doesn't fit, and you have no data to show that surgical site infections is even a problem in the outpatient setting. So how are you going to show improvement?
Well, I'm going to let Dr. Shapiro speak to that. The other thing is that in the SCIP measures, the only other measure that would really be appropriate to ASCs is the IV antibiotic timing, and we did try to harmonize with that measure. We could bundle those two.
I think the reason that we would really request that you continue to endorse this measure in the ASC setting, even given what I heard that very good discussion about the one for the inpatient and outpatient settings, is where this industry is in reporting and doing their data collection. All of the data that you see is only based on less than a fourth of the surgery centers that are Medicare certified out there. What we've tried to do is harmonize measures with the existing CMS measures, and I realize today may be the beginning of the sea change, but I would urge this committee to continue endorsement of this measure to allow us to come back to you with some better statistics on a greater proportion of ASCs, because my fear as a clinician is that there is a lack of penetration in ASCs to the extent that there is in the larger surgical community of these techniques and of the importance of these techniques in preventing HAIs and surgical site infections. So for those reasons, I think because we are at a different place than the other facilities about which you changed your endorsement prior to this, I really urge this committee to let the ASC community continue to use this as a measure to assess our ability to conform with what at least previously has been shown to be process measures that will reduce infection in our patients.
From the National Anesthesia Registry, two-thirds of all surgery centers are hospital-based and probably fall under both sets of guidelines. I would strongly recommend keeping our thinking about this in line with our thinking about the previous measure to reduce confusion. The AOCs can have the same bundle that the inpatient facilities have and arguably should have the same bundle.
I think another point that you made yesterday, Richard, and that I sort of expected for you to make today was that the endorsement of these measures is not a means to collect data for research to see where we stand. It's supposed to be based on actual data that indicates that that we'll be able to make a difference in quality. And so I think that you make a strong argument, and clearly you have the best of intentions, but the goals of NQF endorsement are a little bit different than that.
Well, I agree with what Peter and others have said, that if we didn't vote the other measure, we shouldn't vote this one. It would be inconsistent.
One question I had is about some of the differences between this measure and the other one, and that was that in the denominator, those patients who perform their own hair removal are excluded, but it seems like if a razor increases the risk of infection, it would increase the risk regardless of who does the shaving. And then in the numerator, patients with hair removal from the scrotum are handled differently, and they weren't in the other measure. And so I wasn't sure why those differences were there.
So the scrotal surgery actually is the same in the inpatient one as well. So the inpatient one actually has an exclusion for neurosurgery and scrotal, and actually the measure developers try to harmonize with the inpatient measure to add the scrotal excluded through neurosurgery because they don't have neurosurgery cases in the outpatient setting.
Although it's handled, instead of being handled as an exclusion, it's handled as a numerator positive. So it's handled in a different way rather than lining up.
All right, let's go ahead and vote. Does measuring the NQF criteria for importance to measure and reporting as before, if you think that it's topped out or that it should be part of a bundle but not standalone, then you would vote no. And if you believe that it should be a standalone measure, then you would vote yes. We have 6 yes votes and 13 no votes. Because we've talked about it as a bundle, I think that we should continue with this vote, since we're sort of inventing how this is done. So next, scientific acceptability of measure properties. I say completely, 13 say partially, 1 says not at all. Usability. Seven says completely, 9 says partially, 2 say minimally, and 1 says not at all. Feasibility. Mm-hmm. 13 say completely, 4 say partially, 2 say minimally. And then here again, as before, I think that we don't actually need to vote on does the measure meet all the NQF criteria for endorsement, because we voted no for importance. So I think that the committee would like to respectfully recommend that this be considered for a bundled measure by the developers. Okay, and so our next step is a brief introduction of the measures for today by the developers. And some of the developers from yesterday spoke about measures for today, but many developers are getting their first opportunity to speak. So we'd like to go ahead and start with the developers for the American Academy of Ophthalmology, et cetera.
Hi, good morning. I want to first thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I want to give credit actually to the NQF committee for stimulating our interest. They really strongly urge that we look at patient-reported outcomes. We already have 2 cataract clinical outcome measures, so these are amplifying it. Do you want me to address both measures at once? I don't know if that would be a little bit briefer, or else do you want me to do
it separately? We'd like to address both at once, and so be pretty succinct with it.
Okay, great. The visual function measure, we believe, fits into the national priority, partnerships priority of population health by providing an index of visual health. Patient satisfaction fits perfectly with the patient and family engagement. We also think that these line up really well with the NQF goals. Visual function is an AHRQ tested and validated instrument that provides additional information on the role of visual impairment other than visual acuity, as we said, which is a clinical measure and that's measured by the clinician. This is a patient-reported measure. How do patients do on a daily basis, reading small print, reading a book, seeing steps and curves, reading traffic, and street signs? The patient satisfaction measure could be added to the NQF portfolio of patient experience measure, which already includes the CAPS, the HCAPS, and the family evaluation of hospice care. This was approved by the CAPS consortium and developed with the same scientific rigor and standardization as all the other CAPS instruments. The survey asked patients about information that they received prior to surgery, including risk, benefits, alternatives, information about their care during surgery, post-surgical instructions and the behavior of the surgeon. Do they listen? Do they spend time with the patient? Do they allow them to ask questions? And an overall rating of the quality of the surgeon. So in terms of importance, as you know, cataract surgery, most performed procedure in Medicare beneficiaries, about 3 million beneficiaries, but there's no systematic approach. So we think that these two measures really complement the clinical measures that we already have, post-op complications, which we consider a never event, kind of a measure of surgeon proficiency, the visual acuity measure that we have already that really talks to appropriateness of care, the patient population that really should be operated upon, and then now we have a visual function measure that talks about what really matters to the patient, what affects them in everyday life, and then patient satisfaction as a measure of the patient experience with care. And we think that surgeons can really look at the results of these measures in a comprehensive picture of what happens to these patients and enhance patient outcome and their interaction with patients. I did want to also address some specific issues that came up in the work group discussions last week. The visual function measure, there was a comment that was a complex numerator, and that's because we approached it, I think, thinking of it more as a CMS measure for PQRS.
I'm actually going to ask you to stop there, since we just wanted you to introduce the measure, and you'll have an opportunity to speak about these things in just a few moments. Dr. Bonzi, would you like to go ahead and present?
Okay. Good morning. So there are two measures. You want me to address them together or separately?
You can address them separately.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the first one looks at using a survey, a VF-14, or actually a shorter version of it, which has actually been validated scientifically, and it's a pretty strong measure looking at patient outcomes. So this is different than the other measures, which is more of an objective measure. So in terms of importance, you know, cataract surgery is perhaps the most frequent surgery done in the U.S., at least for CMS purposes. And they're looking at, in terms of, looking at the gap measure, maybe of about 90% patient satisfaction. So there's still an opportunity to improve things further. The scientific data, you know, looks strong. I didn't see anything that was a prospective studies, but you know, there are some, the research there and the scientific validation of the instrument looks strong. One of the questions is usability, and I think the way the information was presented, if it's segmented out in terms of groups that have no comorbidities and those which do have comorbidities, I think that will be more useful. And then finally, the issue is feasibility, because the data there suggests that these particular surveys were administered, you know, by a trained person, whereas doing the surveys by mail or electronic, I didn't see the science out there to show that that's there. So there's a potential in terms of a feasibility issue, but overall, I thought it was pretty strong.
Excuse me, are you talking about 1549?
No, I'm talking about 1536.
So that's a survey?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other comments or questions that came up in the work group meeting from the committee members?
Melinda, do you have anything to add? There was in the work group meeting some discussion about the fact that it is a self-administered survey that's been validated for assisted administration, and there is a notation in 4E1 in the documentation that the elderly would potentially need assistance in order to be able to complete the survey. And it also, in terms of burden, speaks to the potential necessity of need for follow-up with individuals in order to get them completed.
I guess the only question I had is, if we do the survey, what's the actionable item about the survey? What do we learn? What do we take back to improve our practice and care of patients?
And I would ask, if it's the patients administering their own survey, is there a validation with true visual acuity as measured objectively?
And I guess when I was reading this, I was looking at this as maybe a paired measure with the other clinical outcome, which was 0.565. So there's already a measure out there looking at the visual acuity as an outcome, as well as complications of surgery. And I would look at this, if we look at harmonization, as a paired measure, not to replace it.
Can the developers tell us whether or not they intended for this to be paired?
Actually, originally we had submitted a composite measure, which would have been the two clinical outcome measures as well as these two patient-reported outcomes. But because these measures had not come up before as individual measures, we were advised to submit them as individual measures. But the intention would all have always been from the Academy side as a composite.
Okay.
How do you define improvement? Like, what's the degree on the scale of improvement is a question I'd ask earlier.
Yeah. The VF-14 is scored from 0 to 100, so 100 being perfect, that you've done, you can perform all the activities, 0 being not, so the improvement would be a score, or an improvement from the score pre and post on that scale.
If you went up 2 points, that would count as an improvement. Yeah, I'm just trying to get a sense of the scale.
There has not been a defined step improvement. I think we could stipulate it as part of this measure, or as part of the scale and how it's been used throughout ophthalmology. There has not been a defined, I guess, interval for that would be considered improvement. The other thing I was going to say is there have been two studies that have looked at self-administered VF-14 compared to interview-administered and found that that was also a valid way to administer the test.
If I can ask a question of the developers, my understanding is you're suggesting not the VF-14 but the VF-8R instead, which is a shorter version, but it's been clinically validated to be...
That's right. So that feasibility issue of patient response, patient ability to return the questionnaires and response rate, we have recommended a shorter version. As you know, there's a rich literature on visual function and several instruments out there, but we were advised also to propose one instrument that would be used for this measure.
Can you address the other comments and questions from that the committee has raised so far before we ask you some additional questions?
Sure. I think there are questions about how can this affect clinician behavior, and I think the whole rationale of cataract surgery is to improve visual function. So if you find that patients without noticeable or significant improvement on visual function, then that will stimulate those surgeons to look back on those patients and see what characteristics about them would have maybe prevented them from being selected for cataract surgery, or if there were any other factors that might have been able to be ameliorated prior to surgery that would have improved their outcome after surgery.
I think there was a question about, I'm sorry, Google, I promise we'll get to you, Dr. Rogers, but I think Dr. Morton had asked a question about actually burden, didn't you? Wasn't it about burden on the provider?
Burden on the provider, and I guess after hearing the comment, I'm just wondering, what's the incremental gain of the survey in addition to just a clinic visit, where I would think you'd get some idea of function at that point?
I guess the advantage would be that it's a standardized instrument and asked about several realms of visual function, not just one. The clinician may not have time to ask every patient in a systematic approach. And the other question was about burden. And that's why I think we've addressed the shorter questionnaire. People have done this in practice. I mean, it has been mainly used in a research setting, but I think because it's important, because it's so important of patient's improvement after surgery, I don't think it poses an undue burden on the provider or the patient.
I think in some way this is a way of quantifying that conversation between the doctor and the patient. I think we're always going to have trouble where science collides with patient-centeredness in these measures, but I think the patient-centered ones are very important. I mean, if you go have your cataract fixed, and I have, you want to see better afterwards.
Dr. Rogers, would you like to?
Just using the Wilhoit approach here, 2C1, it's probably just a typo that addresses the return rate on your validity testing. I'm concerned that of 414 patients, only 210 returned the questionnaire. Mm-hmm. And It is good for a survey, but it may not be good for the business that we're in, and I have concerns about that. You know, normally people who are pleased will return or have some specific complaint. So we have no idea about the other half. And secondly, there's an issue about, can 51 return the VF-15 postoperatively? I assume it's a typo, but I just want to make sure there's no other secret method you have out there that's named the 15 as opposed to the 14.
No, sorry, that must be an error. But yeah, the return rate, I think, has been looked at 50%, which is high for a questionnaire. But we're hoping if it's for measurement purposes, the physician's office would probably undertake a more directed effort to try to get those patients to return their questionnaires. They'll see them back at post-op visits, and they can kind of ask them or badge them back for their questionnaires.
I mean, that's a big issue in the exclusion criteria for the denominator, using Carol's approach. It says patient refuses to participate. How do you define, I mean, that if they just don't return it, then they exclude it, so then either you're cherry-picking people for your survey results. The other thing is, getting to Richard's point, though, if you have an objective measure of visual performance, then do you, I mean, you can ask the patient, are they seeing better, but you also have a measurement of them seeing better. Mm-hmm. I mean, they go hand in hand, but one that's a flawed measure to be paired with one that's an accurate measure, I'm not sure does it add value?
Well, actually, some people would say visual acuity is not a complete measure of visual function. Visual function encompasses a lot of things that aren't included in visual acuity, such as peripheral vision, visual processing, contrast sensitivity, glare acuity under glare conditions. So visual acuity actually is just one dimension of visual function, whereas this takes into account a lot of different dimensions of visual function and actually gets to what does the patient do every day that's affected by vision.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You can turn the argument exactly around and say that the strict science of measuring, you know, focus in the eye isn't really capturing what the patient wants out of the surgery.
And if I can make a comment, I don't think there's anything to suggest that the VF-14 or as an instrument is flawed. You know, there really isn't any science to support that. I do have a question to developers. There are new implants that are now being used in a small group of people, multifocal implants, and I wonder if 90 days is an adequate period of time to really be measuring that group of people. And I was wondering if that was considered or discussed when you developed the measure.
You're right, because obviously that wasn't considered in the development of the VF-14. And I think the questions are valid, but you're right, the time period, I think to harmonize with the other measures, have been 90 days. 90 days is the visual acuity measure, so we would have to think, I guess, about how to keep that harmonization if we change it from 90 days.
Because that could really skew your results.
Okay. This measure, and I like that it's survey and that it's patient-centered and so on, but it just doesn't seem very well-defined. First of all, some of the comments were, well, the physician could badger the patient to get the survey in. Well, that right there adds bias. The method by which the survey is performed is really key. So, for example, for assessment of health plans, when the CAP survey is done, we have to hire a vendor, and we can't even know who the patients are who were surveyed. The vendor does the sampling, and we can't even know who those people are, so that we're not badgering the person to get the surveys in. So I think that becomes really key, because if I badger my patients and you don't, we may have bias based on that. Second, I think, you know, as specified, and this is what Helen raised, what's improvement? Well, the numerator is based on improvement, and is improvement 1 point or 5 points or 10 points? Until that's defined, we don't even know what we're measuring. Also, if you look at the numerator, and that's in 2A3, there's the numerator includes, is what it says, although it seems like some of these would be exclusions, patients who did not complete their visual function assessment within 90 days. So if somebody didn't complete the assessment, you get credit, is what it says. So you get credit for improvement even if you don't know. And then D is patients who did not have an improvement in their visual function and there is no documented medical or patient reason for not doing so. Well, there's so many knots in that, I'm not sure what it's saying, but it doesn't seem like it would be a numerator event. And then in the denominator, it includes all patients. Well, for a survey measure, there is burden, there's cost to doing a survey, and particularly if you require a vendor or something like that to avoid bias. So consideration of sampling might be a possibility for high-volume centers, but that's something to think about. The numerator time frame is a year, and yet it's specified as being 90 days, so there's a disconnect there. And then under exclusions, 2A9, is there, or it's actually 2A10, if you document a patient reason for not improving visual function or document a medical reason for not improving visual function, the person is excluded. Well, that sounds to me like if there's a complication, I can code that there was a reason, which was a complication, and suddenly the person's excluded. So I really like this measure, but I think it needs a lot more refinement before we're ready to assess it.
Okay, so just to recap the committee comments. First of all, it's unclear what really constitutes improvement in this scale. Secondly, the burden on provider is unclear. The developer said that they didn't think there would be too much burden on the provider, but we know that there is a time and effort and also a cost component. Also, there are concerns that the provider going after the patient to complete the survey may bias the survey results. There was some lack of clarity in the exclusions, including maybe two extensive exclusions. And then lastly, the numerator time frame was disparate within the language of the measure. Any other comments before we vote? And I you know what, I should also say the positive side. Sometimes I leave that out. So there's enthusiasm for the patient-reported side of this, patient-centeredness, which is certainly a laudable goal and one that we need to continue to push forward on. So it's not that the measure in principle is not regarded favorably. It is regarded favorably, but just there are some problems within it that could use fixing.
Okay. Thanks. I just wanted to comment in terms of the numerator. I'm sorry if it wasn't clear, but yeah, the whole reporting period would be over a year, but it would be 90 days that the patient would be by 90 days, the patient would be asked for their visual function or satisfaction reason. The other part of it is, as I said, the numerator was complex because we approached it as a reporting measure. If it was a performance measure, yes, we would only count those in the numerator who had improvement in visual function or satisfaction, and we included the others because, I'm sorry, that's, we had been in that mindset because of how PQRS measures are constructed, and that when you report, you get credit for everybody, even if they didn't actually show an improvement. So sorry about that. We could definitely simplify the numerator just for the reporting purposes. In terms of exclusion, we thought it made sense that if the patient refused to participate, I think that would be at the outset, not because they turned out to have a complication after cataract surgery, or that there was not a medical reason to do the cataract surgery, not because you want to improve their visual function after cataract surgery, but because there's another condition, or just to visualize the back of the eye. But we know that that's the vast majority of cataract surgery doesn't include those exclusions. So, I mean, I think we could support a case that there would be no exclusions in this measure that would simplify it. You know, there's a few cases, but overall, we think the vast majority of surgeries, we could look at the measure that way, not expecting a perfect 100%, but knowing that those exclusions could go away.
Thank you for clarifying that. So now we're going to go ahead and vote on the measure as written. Does the measure meet any criteria for importance to measure and report? You can say yes, one says no. Scientific acceptability of measure properties. Two say completely, 12 say partially, 4 say minimally, and 1 says not at all. Usability. One says completely, 15 say partially. One says minimally, 2 say not at all. Feasibility. One says completely, 12 say partially, 14 say minimally, 2 say not at all. Lastly, does measure meet all the NQF criteria for endorsement? Nine say yes, and 10 say no.
Especially since this is one of the first examples of a patient-reported outcome like this, I think it would be really useful if the committee had specific suggestions or questions back to ophthalmology that they could work on. I mean, for example, we do have a similar measure on the depression side now of the use of the PHQ-9, which is the classic scale we use for depression at baseline. So there's a process measure that says, did you do the PHQ-9? Then there's a measure that says the actual weight at 0, 6, and 12 months. So I think there are some interesting areas that I would hope the committee could give advice, because I think this is a great direction we really want to go. I think it just really comes down to the scientific acceptability of measure properties. Is it really ready for prime time?
And I would say cleaning up the numerator, cleaning up the denominator, cleaning up the exclusions, I think would, I'd love to look at this again on a follow-up call. I voted no, and I was really close. And if it were a clean measure, I think I'd want to go for it.
So we can revisit this on a follow-up call if you guys would like to work with it some more.
Definitely. Thank you.
Okay. And then the next measure, also Dr. Barnaby.
Just on that last one, don't forget to add in what a meaningful scale is in terms of a response.
And methodology.
Exactly. It's still not clear, for example, is it a delta measure? Is there a pre-op number, a post-op number? Is there a delta we're looking at? The numerator is still very, very fuzzy.
And also the survey methodology. I mean, that's a big issue here. I don't know if the developers really have contacted their membership to see the burden that an individual practitioner is going to have to go through. I mean, most of these are done in ASC. You're not looking at a big hospital system that has, you know, other things they're doing. You're looking at a guy or girl out on their own who's got one person doing their scheduling. Now you're going to ask them to do this. I mean, it could be a big burden to do it appropriately.
Right. All of the comments from today will be transcribed and posted as well, so you'll be able to refer back to them.
Okay. The second cataract measure being proposed is 1549, looking at patient satisfaction following cataract surgery. In terms of, importance, obviously we talked about cataract surgery being a very common occurrence and something that needs to be measured and perhaps improved upon. The one thing that this measure looks at, which is different, is, again, looking at the patient's perspective on their experience. And as opposed to looking at visual function, this one is more of an experiential type of measure. And I think in terms of the scientific merit, it was harder for me to put my arms around this. There is a model out there that apparently has been clinically validated, but I wasn't familiar with it and was wondering of the different types of surgical, so especially referenced, how many of those were particularly applicable to ophthalmology. In terms of usable, I had problems with the math and the equation with this one as well, so I guess I need some help in terms of how that would translate into a usable measure. And then feasibility, again, it's the burden of getting the information and that sort of thing. So this one I was a little less clear on. I clearly see the value of it, but it's a new process for me to look at, and I think for most of us to look at as well. So I have some questions specifically for the developers. And the two particular questions are the the modeling that you did in terms of the questionnaire that was field tested, that you worked in conjunction with the American College of Surgeons, and also the mathematical model that you developed. To me, it seemed a little confusing.
And I'll just indicate that we did go to ARC to ask them to actually submit the surgical CAPS tool. They've been working closely with ACS, and that they don't feel ready to do that at this time. So,
any other questions or comments for the developer? Okay.
Yeah, in terms of the CAPS, surgical CAPS, we did it as a cross-surgical collaboration within the Surgical Quality Alliance. So you're right, it's not specific to ophthalmology, but we feel that it can address a lot of the important concerns about did the surgeon listen to the patient? Was the patient asking questions? Were they provided the pre-op instructions, post-operative instructions? And in terms of, I guess I'm not sure, in terms of the mathematical modeling, what did you refer to?
In terms of understanding how the results were presented, it just wasn't, to me, intuitive when I was looking at the measures and how they were broken down and presented.
So this is how the SCAP is scored then. So there's different composites for how the SCAP is scored. Have them here. And then you would look across, so it's information to help you prepare for surgery, how well surgeons communicate with patients before surgery, surgeons' attentiveness on day of surgery, information to help you recover, how well surgeon communicates with patients after surgery, helpful, courteous, and respectful staff at surgeon's office, and an overall rating of the surgeon, which is 0 to 10. And then there's different ways of presenting the data, but basically the proportional scoring method is there's three options for the responses, yes, definitely, yes, somewhat, and no, and you would just calculate the average proportion across the category for each composite. That's how the SCAPs would be, the results of the SCAPs would be shown or displayed.
I think this may be another one where the numerator statement isn't at all clear, because the numerator statement doesn't reflect any of that. The numerator statement also, again, seems to include, it seems like the rate would almost come out to be 100%, so the measure is satisfaction, but what seems to be measured is whether you measured satisfaction. Well, those are very different. This is being presented as a public accountability measure, and whether you assess satisfaction is of no interest from a public accountability standpoint. So again, I think the concept is one of great interest, but I'm not at all clear on exactly, you know, what is satisfaction. What counts as satisfaction? Is it one question? Is it 10 questions? Is it a composite? Is it what's the score? I think there's just lots of questions.
Any other comments or questions for the developer? Would you like to say anything about what counts as satisfaction? Have you all discussed that in your development group?
Yeah, and I'm sorry for the confusion again in the numerator. It definitely is what is satisfaction, not that you just measure satisfaction, but to be the result that patients were satisfied after cataract surgery. In terms of the SCAPs, again, it's like the VS-14. They haven't defined, I guess, base level of satisfaction. Definitely, if you look at the proportional scores, you'd want the yes, definitely, yes, somewhat, obviously, the majority versus the no responses in each of the composite measures, and then the rating of the surgeon, which is 0 to 10, 10 being the best. Obviously, we would want it greater than 5, but maybe we can also regroup and try to clarify those things in the measure after this meeting.
Would you mind to say just another word of when you say composite measures, to what are you referring specifically?
So the SCAPs consists of 41 questions, so they're broken out into, you know, pre-surgical, during surgery, after surgery, and staff. So those are the composites, sorry, that I was referring to, that SCAPs breaks it down into.
I had a question on the feasibility issue. How universal is membership in the American Academy of Ophthalmology? Is that a very general group that virtually all ophthalmologists belong to?
Right. We have 94% of all practicing ophthalmologists in the United States.
Could I make a suggestion that maybe the Academy could work out a way of becoming the vendor for the survey, and that that might facilitate it for the broad practice?
Well, as a good suggestion, we do have a PQRS registry, and my thoughts also were to serve as a vendor, to serve as the web administrator of the surveys, and also be able to score them and aggregate the scores.
And again, I think it's worth considering whether really it's all patients who had surgery or whether it's a sample. Sampling certainly can help control costs.
And similar to a visual function measure, I guess we heard of vision, these are composite measures, and under the PQRS, it is a sample of patients, just 30 patients as well. Yeah. So I think the burden requirements, we had been thinking that it would be a sample of patients and not all the patients.
But the denominator statement is all.
Okay, so let's move on to the vote of the measure as written. First of all, importance to measure and report. Proteins say yes, six say no. Scientific acceptability of measure properties. One says completely, 10 say partially, 5 say minimally, 3 say not at all. Just hit your buttons one more time and hit the send button. Three say completely, 10 say partially. I say minimally, 1 says not at all. Feasibility. One says completely, 10 say partially, 6 say minimally, 2 say not at all. Does the measure meet all of the NQF criteria for endorsement? I say yes and 14 say no, and I think that this is very similar to the previous measure, that we'd be interested in seeing a revised version of this measure and that we think that patient-reported outcomes are very important. We're going to take a short break, 15 minutes. Let's reconvene just before 10:30.